Welcome. This is the Fantasy Sports Collective podcast. Pushing episode 70, and we're firmly past free agency, about a month out almost exactly from the NFL draft, which will come up at the end of April. And just this is speculation time. So I'll talk a little bit about what we saw post free agency. I'm not going to go into depth about who the winners are, particularly as it looks at fantasy, because look, I don't know if Devin Singletary is going to get 300 touches. And by the way, even if he does, is that better than, say, 225, 230 touches for Saquon Barkley? I don't know. Probably not, because Barkley's in a much better high leverage situation. So I'll touch on March Madness, which kicked off this past week. Some of the crazy stories in sports, like Shohei Ohtani. Did he bet? Did he not bet? Clearly something's awry here, and there's some foul play. And yeah, we'll get to all of that on the flip side.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now.
Okay. Exciting time of the year. Actually, what is exciting time of year? Come on. March Madness is awesome. You got the NBA playoffs rounding in shape. Unfortunately for me, my team is looking like it's a futile season and maybe lost year in the Golden State Warriors, but it has been a great ride, so can't blame them for that. As we head in the playoffs, it's going to be some interesting storylines around, can the Timberwolves stay strong? Can they hold off and actually make a serious run at this? Are they a real contender in the East? Are the Celtics finally going to crown themselves? They've been flirting with this for years. Are the Bucks going to turn it on with kind of their revamped lineup and just Giannis in general? I don't know if there's anyone else in the East I'm really worried about. I think Philly with Embiid kind of in and out, and even if he's there, I'm not sure. I'm excited to see that once we get into the playoffs. March Madness has been awesome. We just got to the Sweet 16. Not crazy, shocking upsets or whatnot. I think one of the things that's cool about college basketball today is you have a lot more variability because you got these mid-majors, if they call them, whatever you want to call them, who are just really well coached. Like Gonzaga is a great example. I think they've been 9 straight Sweet 16s. I don't know if that would have been possible for a school like that in the 80s and 90s. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that they're able to recruit more often than not guys that are staying 2, 3, even sometimes 4 years. They do have their 1 year guys. Chet Holmgren was 1 year, and I'm blanking on the third year guy who had an awesome freshman years now with Orlando, who was a top pick. So they get some guys, but they have more continuity. As you're seeing that, that's the downside of college basketball, by the way. From when I grew up, it was great. March Madness was amazing. The college champion was huge. But I think it's because you had continuity. You knew these guys. You saw a Ronnie Cycli and a Sherman Douglas grow up together and play 3+ years, really understand the pick and roll game, understand their strengths and weaknesses. So anyhow, I'm excited for that. And I'll talk about that as we get through March Madness and get further into April. On the football front, look, I'm not going to go deep on any of these detailed making predictions on who did what and whatnot. I've gone through some of the top free agent additions and what I thought of them, but I'm not going to go through in detail and rehash the Atlanta story. I will say we're setting ourselves up for a pretty interesting draft. I think it's pretty clear we're going to see 5 quarterbacks in the first round with an outside chance at 6. And we could have 4 in the first 5 picks, which would be, I think that's the most since maybe the Akili Smith, Donovan McNabb draft. There's a few other guys in there. I don't think Tim Couch was that year. I think Tim Couch was 2 years earlier. And I think you're going to see Penix make it in the first round and maybe Bo Nix. We could even have 6 guys in the first like 12 to 15 picks, which would be an incredible number at quarterback position. And then in addition, we're going to see a minimum of 5 wide receivers, possibly 7 go in the first round, and a handful go early second round who guys would be first round picks in previous drafts. I look at Xavier Worthy as an example. You compare him to, say, like a Henry Ruggs type player. Both were highly productive on very good college football teams, had multiple years. Worthy was exceptional at the combine and had apparently had a really good pro day this week. Way higher ceiling than Ruggs, quite frankly. Ruggs was a mid first round pick. Now, granted, his career didn't turn out great. It's unfortunate what happened there. But Worthy's probably going to be a late first or a second round pick. You guys have a Troy Franklin, an awesome player, back to back 1,000 yard seasons, very good. He's going to be a productive receiver, barring injury, on the next level, assuming he lands in the right place. That's a guy who in most drafts is a first-round pick. This year, I don't think he has any chance of sniffing the first round, and he's going to be a productive, potentially impact player at the next level. Some really good guys. Keon Coleman. Now, granted, he couldn't land at his first stop, but moves to Florida State and just lights it up. Great year. Really good size. So questions about how he separates, but you're looking at some really high-end talent that's going to fall the second, even potentially third rounds. From a fantasy point of view, a lot of interesting talent, and you could see like 15 of the first 24, 25 picks at wide receiver, quarterback, and tight end. And there'll be one tight end. It'll be Brock Bowers. But you could see 7, 8 receivers and 6 quarterbacks and then a tight end. So that only gets us to exactly 14. But that's a lot of skill position talent. It's going to be great to talk about after the draft. And what gets me to think that, you just look at some of the situations that have transpired here. Denver has got Jared Stidham as their starter. And maybe that's okay, especially to start the year. I think if they take a Penix or Nix, those guys are probably more ready. Sidham's a nice transition guy for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks. And he's held the position down. He's not terrible. You're not going to win a title with him, though. Probably not even going to lead you to the playoffs. So you got that situation. You got Minnesota, who's going with Sam Darnold. I'm sorry, there's some people out there who are still believers, but I don't think he's you're doing it yourself a disservice with Jay Jets, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson. You've got some offensive talent there. You can't go into the season with Sam Darnold and have a straight face that we're trying to be put our best foot forward. So there's a lot of talk about them trading up. You got the Raiders, who, now granted, I think Gardner Minshew he's a step above a Jared Stidham. He's somebody who you can probably be 500 with and definitely be in some shootouts, but he's also going to lose you some games. So he's not a complete dumpster fire, but he's definitely somebody you're probably looking to upgrade. And Tim and Aiden McConnell or O'Connell, I don't think either of those guys are long-term solutions. So they're obviously going to make a move. And then you've got the obvious tried and true guys who need quarterbacks. You got New England. Maybe they can make it a half a season with Jacoby Brissett. I actually like Jacoby Brissett. I think the biggest challenge with him is if you could guarantee me he would be healthy for 17 games, I actually would like him as a better fit, like in Las Vegas or even Minnesota. But the problem with him is he might only make it 3 or 4 weeks. How many times has he been given the starting job, due to injury or suspension in the case of Tom Brady back in the day? And he just couldn't even make it through more than 2 or 3 games. So it's definitely worrisome. So they definitely need a quarterback. You got the New York Giants. They're not even in those top two picks, who needs a quarterback. You got the Bears, who just, dumped Fields to be a backup for Pittsburgh. So they're obviously taking Caleb Williams. You got Washington, who's cleared the decks and they've got nothing there. In fact, they went and picked up Mariota, who's barely a backup at this point. I think that was even a questionable call. So you've got a lot of situations where these teams essentially are telegraph what they're doing in the draft. And I think, all those teams take quarterbacks. That's your 6 first round guys. And maybe Denver, maybe the Raiders roll the dice and say, hey, we'll try to take this in the second round. I think Denver would have to trade back because they don't have a second round pick. So that's going to be interesting. And then receiver, again, ton of talent there. I hope some of these guys land in the right spots. I'm not sold on Arizona as a great landing spot. Yes, you get a lot of targets. Maybe it's a good spot. I'm definitely not sold on the New York Giants as a spot. But again, lots of targets, so it's going to get hyped up. But overall, I'm excited for that. I'll talk at length about some of the moves as we get to that place. One move that we haven't talked about that occurred since the last pod was Mike Williams going to the New York Jets. Sorry, I was bungling on that. I think it's a great signing and great fit for both parties. He's a guy that will, Rodgers really gels with those type of receivers, guys that can go up and get it, possession, bigger body guys. Rodgers has pinpoint accuracy and a rifle, and he's a perfect number two guy for him. I think he actually could have a really big touchdown catch season as the kind of go-to red zone target and get a couple bombs as well and really divert attention from Garrett Wilson. So really good fit for Williams to have a bounce back, potentially even career year as he goes into his full free agency next year as a healthy guy. So I really like that fit for both Mike Williams and for the Jets, given the situation. Now, assume Aaron Rodgers is 100% healthy, it's a good fit. Okay, Let me flip over to the craziest story of the week, which is the most famous baseball player on the planet, the kind of shining star for Major League Baseball, spans Asia, brings in all the Japanese and Far East kind of contingency, which is Shohei Ohtani. For those of you who missed this, you're in a cave or something. Last week, investigative reporter, I think a local reporter in the LA area, had figured out that there had been some large payments to the tune of about 4.5 million wire transfers from Ohtani's bank account to a known Southern California bookie. And for those of you who have never done a wire transfer, you'd have to be a primary banker to make these wires, and you have to get authentication. And it's a fairly involved process. It's not crazy sophisticated, but you have to go through a serious process here. And what happened was the investigative reporter broke this news, and immediately Ohtani's longtime friend and personal interpreter, this person spends basically every waking hour with Shohei during the season and during his spring training, it goes everywhere with him and has been a longtime friend of his. He immediately took responsibility, saying that he was embarrassed and he had been gambling and he'd let it get the best of him. And he had asked Shohei to cover his gambling debts and he would somehow find a way to pay him back. And just took the total fall for this pretty quickly. Within 4 or 5 hours, the tune had been changed. Actually, I think that report came out and then he'd taken the fall. And by the next morning, there was damage control happening. And now Shohei's people had fired the interpreter and said he had stolen the money and that Shohei knew nothing about it. And which, again, I'm not saying Ohtani is lying or it did anything nefarious here. But let's look at the facts. Again, a wire transfer requires a control of the bank account and you have to get authentication. The interpreter, I find it hard to believe, would have access to the bank account. And so therefore, some other person, Ohtani's financial manager, whatever it may be, had to be the one to execute this transaction. And so therefore, the notion that he was stealing the money rings a little hollow. And I, quite frankly, I think where the truth probably lies is much closer to what the interpreter said the first day, which is if Ohtani didn't do the bets, which you could argue maybe he did, if he didn't do the bets, but he was just helping out his friend who got himself into trouble, it seems like that's what his friend was literally admitting to and taking the fall for. So there's some disconnect here. I don't think we've heard the last of this. And quite frankly, the Dodgers bring this karma on themselves. They had the highest paid pitcher issue. I won't go into the sexual assault issues, but let's just say he never pitched again for them. And now they've got themselves in a kind of Pete Rose potential situation. Something went wrong here. And keep in mind, I'm not making any judgment about betting, but it is illegal to bet games as a player. And it's illegal to place bets of that size in the state of California, which is where Ohtani plays and where these bets were made. There has been a violation of the law. Now, is the spirit of it? I don't know. But I will say, as a San Francisco Giants fan, I would love to see the Dodgers face a wrath of pain on this and Ohtani be forced to set out a bunch of games in suspension and just really muddle up their entire season. So anyhow, on that note, I hope everyone has a great day. Looking forward to all the great news coming out shortly on the season ahead. And that's good. Have a good one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Before we leave, let me tell y'all a little something. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. Uptown, funk you up. I said uptown.